It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome back to the Hockey News Podcast, presented by BetMGM and McKinney. I'm Mike Stevens. This is Ryan Kennedy. Ryan, how you doing?
Pretty good. How's it going?
Pretty good. You know, it's a shame when we go in here for this podcast and nothing's happened.
We're just
grasping at straws.
Yeah.
The NHL has been kind of a desolate wasteland, really, when it comes to news.
The doldrums.
Dog days of the season already, yeah. 3-4 weeks in. Yeah. Obviously, we're being facetious and sarcastic. We got you. How you fell for it. Obviously, the Boston Bruins did some crazy stuff. They signed Mitchell Miller, the controversial, if you want to call him, the convicted criminal, Mitchell Miller. He was convicted in a juvenile court when he was 14 in 2016. One count of assault, one count of violating the Ohio Safe Schools Act for basically a year. It was just the one incident he was convicted for, but he sort of enacted a years-long campaign of torture, really, against of racial, physical, mental, everything of a black and disabled a classmate of his. The Boston Bruins thought he was a good person to bring into the organization. They signed to a 3-year entry-level contract with the maximum level of term, average annual salary, and performance bonuses that they could. They tried to sneak it by on a Friday. Did not work that way. The hockey world exploded. And within 48 hours, first of all, they also didn't contact the family. They didn't contact, at least from what we were told from Gary Bettman, they didn't contact the NHL, but there seems to be conflating sort of info on that we'll get into. They basically just decided to go rogue with this. They contacted their leaders. The leader said they didn't believe in it. The coach wasn't included in the vetting process. Yeah, they went ahead with it. The entire hockey world shamed them into basically terminating his contract or parting ways to the point where they will likely terminate it in a little bit.
Right.
Everyone has sat here and you know, said about how ridiculous the situation is, how embarrassing it is for the Bruins, how just irresponsible it was for them to do this. You know, we don't need to sit here and add to that. It's already been done. What we want to do here is sort of go into the next steps.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? Because this is a relatively unprecedented situation where a team signs a player and then 2 days later, they essentially say they're parting ways with a player.
Mm-hmm.
That player didn't do anything from the time he was signed to the time they said they were parting ways to terminate a contract. You know, like Evander Kane, the way that his contract was supposedly terminated was that they claimed that he violated COVID protocols and all that, or the Sharks did last year. What are the next steps here? Because we have the Bruins saying they're parting ways due to further information coming, or new information that was revealed.
Right.
Even though we don't know exactly what that new information is, it's assumed that the new information is that the incident that he was convicted for was not it was not an isolated incident, which then that knowledge has been public knowledge for years now. Since he was drafted by the Coyotes and ultimately had his rights revoked.
Yep.
So it's tough. It's a difficult leg to stand on there. Then we have Gary Bettman saying that they were not consulted, and yet then Cam Neely, on the other hand, in his press conference on Monday, said that actually before that they consulted Bill Daly. So it's wondering what the NHL is going to be there. And then also, like, the Players Association, if this contract is voided or if this contract is terminated, they will file a grievance. This is far from over. There are a lot of steps, a lot of things that are going to play out here. Where does this thing go moving forward?
Yeah, and I think the most newsworthy thing we're waiting on is the actual termination of the contract.
Yeah.
You know, Mitchell Miller would have to go through waivers first for the purposes of terminating the contract. And so until that happens, we're really in a holding pattern because, you know, like, legally and contractually speaking, you can't just say, we're walking away. I mean, there's a process that the Bruins will have to go through. And as you mentioned, there's an assumption that if they were to try to terminate this contract, the NHLPA would file a grievance, I believe, within 60 days, if I'm not mistaken. And it's funny because this is going to continue to be thorny. I'm sure a lot of people will say, like, oh, why is the union sticking up for Mitchell Miller? Their job is to stick up for
everyone.
And, you know, to sort of paraphrase Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, even a werewolf deserves representation, you know, if they are part of this Players Association. He did sign a contract, and, you know, what I was interested in, and we do not have an answer for this yet, is, you know, he had a signing bonus.
Yeah.
So did he get the signing bonus as soon as he signed? I assume so, but it's not necessarily true from my understanding, because signing bonuses can get paid out in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's on July 1st, for example. Sometimes it can be incremental.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure what that situation is. And, you know, could it be revoked? Again, this is all contract law. It's not necessarily a fun thing for hockey fans to think about.
It's
certainly not something that the Bruins or the PA want to deal with, but
they put themselves
it's a business.
And the Bruins, not even the PA, but the Bruins themselves, they may not want to deal with this. There was a great solution to how to not deal with this, and it was to not do it in the first place.
Right.
And to your point, the Players Association, there is a valid argument here that a lot of people are conflating that, you know, yes, the PA is going to have to step behind or step behind Miller here. But then people are going, well, why did they essentially leave Kyle Beach to fend for himself when this is going on? And yet they'll you know, take the back of this. And that's a valid argument. That's one that they will need to answer for. This is, you're right. This is not going to end. Like when his contract, or basically when his contract is terminated, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. They've already said they're parting ways. And you can't just sign a contract with a guy and then bury him. You can't just, you know.
Yeah.
Like, that will then be another grievance that is filed. So the contract will be terminated at some point, whether that's legal or not. There's still going to be a lot of steps at play. And it just, again, goes to highlight that on top of this, like, this is now roping in a lot of other sort of actors in this who are now being held under scrutiny. Like, again, because of what Bettman said, it's that he wasn't consulted, and yet then Neely comes out and says, oh, we consulted with Bill Daly. Now we're wondering, okay, so it was the... this was a contract that was filed by the NHL. It was approved by the NHL. Why did the NHL approve it? All this could be prevented by the Bruins just not making a move that they really, like, categorically did not need to make.
Yeah, and, you know, again, we've sort of crossed the Rubicon on that. But, you know, it raises interesting questions. And I think what's interesting is, you know, for the PA... again, going back to Miller, and, you know, there was questions about Beach and what he said and what he said to who, and what they could reveal to the actual union leadership. But I'm sure there are a lot of people out there will say, like, why do you have to defend them? And what I would say is, you know, it's all about sort of gradients here. So, you know, a lot of people, most people outside of, you know, Mitch Miller's immediate circle, whether it's his family, his agents, whatnot, I know a lot of people are very upset with what he did. But if the union doesn't defend him, then what's the next rung? You know, it's like, this is, you know, the union is there for the players to make sure their rights are upheld. So it's like, what if it's something not as serious? You know, they don't get to pick and choose. And I think that's the important thing about having a union for the players, and we know, you know, dating back historically, they certainly needed it, you know, when they were first formed. But having that advocate that will be for you no matter what is important, because, you know, like I say, there's different gradients of what happens, and you don't want to go down that slippery slope of, well, if somebody does something, you know, slightly outside of the lines, we can't defend them.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure that you have just a blanket policy. And, I mean, to me, what's interesting now is, what does Mitchell Miller decide to do next? So, I don't get the sense that he wants to make it easy for the Bruins to, say, just terminate his contract. Because, I mean, just thinking out loud, technically he could retire. And I'm not sure what the contractual... fallout of that would be if that would, you know, if that would help out the Bruins. I'm not sure why he'd want to help them out for that matter. It doesn't mean he can't play hockey professionally. The KHL's always there.
You know that's the next destination.
Like, yeah, because even when there was talks of him joining the Providence Bruins, I did see that AHL Commissioner Scott Housen said he would want to talk to Mitchell Miller before anything happened on that regard. So, you know, I know there are people out there that would say, well, is he never supposed to play hockey again? No, he can play hockey again. He can play pro hockey, but he doesn't have the right to play in the NHL. It's a privilege to play in the NHL. So I think that's a very important distinction to make.
It is, yeah. It's also, like, and again, you know, we're not going to rehash the thing, but, like, to everyone who is saying, like, what, this is a guy who made a mistake when he was 14. Mm-hmm. Like, he has never shown any remorse for this. You know, he has never, in the court documents, I looked them up myself, they're publicly available, in the court documents, the judge who convicts him says in her sentencing sort of remarks, I don't believe you feel any remorse for this. I don't believe you feel that you've impacted this person. I believe that you just feel sorry for yourself. Years have gone by. He's been drafted, had his rights revoked. You know, all this has never apologized or reached out. And the only time he did was you know, in the week leading up to his signing, where he DM'd his victim on Instagram and said, you know, hey, sorry, man, basically. And said, I'm also not apologizing because this will help me get back into hockey. And then a week later, he got back into hockey. So I want to make that very clear that, like, this is not cancel culture run amok. Mm-hmm. This is not that. This is someone who displayed a pattern of behavior throughout his entire adolescence, never made any never took any steps to be remorseful, never took any steps to contact the people he wronged to make amends. And now is expecting to take to you know, have the privilege of earning millions of dollars in the most lucrative and top professional league in the world. Mm-hmm. That's not a right. That's a privilege. Clearly, he has not earned that, and he will likely not play in the NHL ever. I mean, I can't see another team signing themselves up to deal with this.
Not at this point.
Exactly.
No.
So we just want to make that clear that is the situation here. The Players Association is going to have to step in and defend them, because, like you said, they need a blanket statement. They can't pick and choose, because then that leads to, you know,
it's a slippery slope.
It's a very slippery slope. So we get that, but at the end of the day, I think the resolution here is that Mitchell Miller will not be playing in the NHL and will likely never. And I think that should be, at least in the context of this situation, a suitable outcome for now, I think. And that's great. All right, moving on to actual hockey. I love talking about actual hockey.
Yes.
Thank you. The Pittsburgh Penguins. They're not playing very well. This is a team that is struggling massively. Mm-hmm. They're 4-6-2, seventh in the Metropolitan Division. They have 10 points. They just lost to Seattle. Ah, man, this team has not been playing very well. And, you know, to be fair, this was my team that I picked. It's my team that I picked to take a step back this year. Mm-hmm. But what is going on?
Well, you know, it's tough. And it's funny because this has been a team where we've kind of been waiting for them to fall off for a couple of years now, because they are, you know, they do have an aging core, albeit an aging core of Hall of Famers.
Are you saying you've been praying on the Pittsburgh Penguins' downfall?
Never.
Wow, never.
Because I can drive to Pittsburgh. So I enjoy Pittsburgh. I like to go to the Grove City Primanti Brothers.
I've never been. I really want to go.
It's wonderful. Because the Grove City one is like 4 hours, 4.5 hours from Toronto, so it's perfect. You stop there for lunch, then you get to Pittsburgh about 45 minutes.
Is Primanti worth it? Like, is it worth the hype?
I think it is.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah. Although,
I trust your food taste.
Level of hype.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah,
level of hype.
Okay, interesting.
But anyways, so yeah, I mean, you still have Crosby and Malkin. They're still playing quite well.
Yep.
But overall, you know, special teams have been a big problem for them.
They have.
You know, you look at the defense core, it's having some struggles. Chris Letang, -7 on the year. He does have 7 points.
Yes, but...
But
those have now been washed away by the
seven. -7.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And goaltending, it's been slightly below average.
They have a collective 8.95 save percentage.
Yeah, and if you look at goals saved above average...
Yes.
Both Tristan Jarry and Casey DeSmith are kind of like -2, -1. So, you know,
they're -0.5, -0.2.
Yeah, maybe it's goals against expected.
Goals save above average.
Yeah.
They are goals and goals allowed percentage. They are above 100. Like, it's They're not playing very well.
Not playing very well. Yeah. They're not the worst in the league, no. But they're certainly not the best. Mm-hmm. So, and again, they're in a tough division. So it's tough because other than the fact that they haven't had a lot of prospects to bring into the fold over the past few years, it's tough because when you have Crosby, Malcolm, Letang, you want to go for it. And, absolutely. You know, Jake Guentzel, you know, as soon as they get to the playoffs, Jake Guentzel turns into a monster. So you got that going for you. They've been able to bring in free agents, you know, pretty consistently at, or I should say, either rentals or, you know, guys that they can bring in as wingers at the trade deadline. They've done that pretty consistently over the years. But at some point, you know, your window's only open for so long. And I mean, we've seen this before. Usually it's been because of injuries and Pittsburgh's gone into a bit of a slide and then they pull out of it. Mm-hmm. Because again, they get excellent coaching from Mike Sullivan.
They do.
And they have an excellent culture there where it's next guy up.
Oh, yeah.
But at this moment, they're blowing games. They're not doing the little things right. And they got to pull out of it because again, you just can't get too behind in that metropolitan division.
So I look at you're right. Their special teams are a big problem. You know, their the power play percentage, it's operating at 20. The league average is, or 20% just average. League average is 22.07. So they're pretty far behind there. The penalty kill is the biggest issue here.
Yeah, I think it's 26th in the league.
Yeah, 73.17%. And then you look and you go, okay, so the penalty kill is really hurting you. And what was one of the biggest trades they made in the offseason? It was dealing away John Marino.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's playing excellent
fantastic.
Now.
He has been like the missing piece
for this
Devil's blue line to bring them and take that next step. There are, I think vibes really do matter for a team. And re-signing Malkin, re-signing Letang, even just like re-signing Rust to the deal, like he, based on his last couple of years, $5.125 million, that's a bit of a discount for Ryan Rust. People were expecting him to command $6.5 million. Getting for that is really good. And then also re-signing Ricard Raquel, which I think was maybe somewhat unnecessary based on, you know, like the fact that he was like a rental and you seem to have guys that get, you know, like good wingers. But hey, you got him, you know, $5 million. That contract might not look that great in a couple years, but still, yeah, this is a very, like, this is a very slow team. This is a very old team. It seems to be missing that sort of, like, it's an old team in that, like, I would say the biggest sort of, like, high-level addition that you got was Jeff Petrie, who's 34, who's being riddled with injuries the last couple of years. So is Letang. Letang has been riddled with injuries the last couple of years. And then you're forcing guys like Ryan Dumoulin, Marcus Pedersen, to take on bigger roles. Jan Ruda, I think, is a good player, but he worked really well in the Tampa system.
Yeah.
Tampa structure, maybe he won't work as well here. And then on top of that, I think, like, there was no reason to sign Kasperi Kapanen to the two-year, $3.2 million extension that you gave him. You know, they were healthy scratching him last year. He is, he was maddening in Toronto before he left. And then, according to every Pens fan that I can talk to and every Pens media member I talk to, he is just as maddening, if not more, in his second stint there. This just seems to be a team that is, you know, led by some really high quality talent. Crosby is just as good as he's ever been.
Yeah.
You know, like Malkin's performing very well. So is, like you said, Chris Letang's got 7 points. You're not looking at Chris Letang to be your shutdown defenseman. You're looking at him to operate and transition and
yeah.
from the back end. But this does seem like a slow team, kind of a plodding team at this point. Can they get out of it?
Yeah, and again, you know, we've seen this show before, and they usually do.
Yes.
Now, playoff success has been rather fleeting lately.
For a team that has gone for it every year,
yeah.
that has spent all the draft capital they have, all
yes.
the prospect capital they have, they haven't... Have they made it out of the first round?
It's been several years,
yeah.
I know that, because I know the Islanders took them out a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
But it certainly is at the point where you still have Crosby and Malkin, so you can't rebuild.
No, you can't. No.
So I think, unfortunately, they're just kind of in this space now where they have to play up the string and be like, if we can do it, we'll do it. But otherwise, you know, like, you can't really tear it down because you're never going to be a basement team when you have Crosby and Malkin in the lineup. It's just not going to happen because, again, players don't tank. Hall of Famers certainly don't tank. So you're always going to be at least, like, at worst, you're mediocre. But the question is, how long can you afford to be mediocre before you have to say, okay, well, we need the next generation to start to take hold. And, yeah, and right now they don't have that pipeline because they have been going for it. So it's a vexing situation.
It really is. And it's not just that, like, this isn't the last dance scenario. They have all of these players signed for at least 3 more years. Mm. Crosby, you know, his contract comes up in 24, 25. Malkin, they just re-signed for 4 years. Latang, they just re-signed for 6 years.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, like, this is their, you know, older core. I mean, it's going to be there for a while. Like, so you're talking about how they can't rebuild when you have these players. Mm. Well, that means they're not going to be able to rebuild for at least another 3 years, if not more, depending,
yeah,
on all these, where they all are. And like we said, for a team that has sent out all the draft capital they can, you know, as much as they possibly can, all the prospect capital they can too, you know, trading guys like Kalen Addison,
mm-hmm,
you know, and stuff like that for older guys and Jason Zucker, you know, they sent a second round pick out for Ricard Raquel, like just all of these moves. They haven't gotten out of the first round in a very long time. If,
mm-hmm,
I believe maybe even since, like, have they gotten out of the first round since they, since the Capitals sort of like toppled them in the second round to win their cup? I don't think so. And that was 2018.
Yeah, maybe not, because, I mean, they lost to the Rangers, they lost to the Islanders a couple of times.
So that's 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's a long time for a core led by Malkin, Crosby, Letang to not mm-hmm do that. That's difficult. I think, you know, like in Pittsburgh, the temperature is getting very difficult, like, very chilly. It's, the fan base is really rowdy right now. They're
right,
not happy. And I think that should start seeping into more of the, you know, like the national, because we haven't really been noticing it, but
mm,
like, this is a team that is the most all-in team, I would say, in the league. They
mm
haven't made out of the first round in 4 years, and they just started a season after re-signing all of their older injury-prone stars. They started out, you know, 4-6-2, and they're,
yeah,
second last in their, if or last, I believe, in their division. It's tough, man. It's not looking good.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of, and Columbus is probably below them.
Oh yes, Columbus, yeah, is, yes.
The only thing I could see is if they are out of it by the trade deadline, if management goes to Crosby and Malkin and says, "Look, we're going to try to pull an LA Kings here, and, you know, switch around kind of fast." You deal a bunch of other guys, you know, veterans that can help playoff teams,
yeah,
for draft picks, like, or prospects. Probably good if you could get a top-end prospect,
yes,
somebody that,
like,
could help you out.
Like an actual blue chipper, yeah.
Like an actual blue chipper that can help you out in a year or two max.
Yeah.
At the least, get a couple of high-end picks, you know, at least another first-rounder. It'd be great if you could get a couple of first-rounders. And then maybe come draft day, you trade up to get as high as you can. Because this is a great draft.
Oh, this is a king. They call it a kingmaker draft.
Yeah, so if you can get, and hey, I mean, there's always the possibility, if the Penguins get into the lottery, even if they're not the worst team in the league, they could win the lottery. And then how funny would it be if they got Connor Bedard?
That would be insane.
Yes. But as it is, you can say to yourself, okay, well, if we can get into that top 10 at least once,
mm-hmm,
and then maybe get, you know, like, maybe have another sort of mid-round pick, you could get a player who in hopefully 2-3 years can already start to impact your club. And at least, you know, then Crosby and Malkin can say, okay, well, there's going to be some short-term pain, we get it. But if we get a couple of blue chippers in here that can be that next generation, maybe we can still make one more run.
I feel like they will look at, you know, let's say they're struggling a bit by the deadline. I feel like they'll do the opposite. I feel like
they could, yeah.
And to be fair, like, for, we talked about how they deplete all the draft capital. They have all their firsts and seconds for the next 3 years, including this one.
Mm.
I wouldn't be shocked if they went out and they, like, took, and then keep in mind, this is Ron Hextall and Brian Burke we're talking about.
Yeah.
These are not guys who love rebuilding. These are guys who swing for the fences.
Are you saying Patrick Kane's going to Pittsburgh?
Maybe. Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah,
like,
I hear you.
If they go, like, look, our offense is not performing as well,
yeah,
but we have Crosby, Malkin, Letang. I wouldn't be shocked if they're like, all right, we have our firsts and seconds, and, you know, like, their prospects aren't that great, but, you know,
no,
like, I don't know.
They just don't have any prospects.
Like Philip Hollander,
yeah,
like Owen Pickering, maybe, like, they have Ty Smith, who is not really a prospect anymore,
no,
I guess, but, like, you can make some sort of moves work. I wouldn't be shocked to see them swing for the fences and go for it.
Right.
Ryan Burke does not seem like the kind of guy who likes to sit back and go, yeah, long-term pain or short-term pain is really my jam right now. I really want
to
do it.
That's fair. That's fair. He's not a timid man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Speaking of teams that are struggling,
mm,
older plotting teams, I would say, that are struggling,
mm,
St. Louis Blues, man, this is a disaster. 3-7, 6 points, they're last in the Central Division. They just lost 7 in a row. or six of them in a row, I believe. This is a really, like, this is a bad team.
This is tough. And, you know, again, a team that has won a Stanley Cup in recent years and still has a lot of those players. And obviously there is turnover. But, you know, I look at this squad and, you know, GM Doug Armstrong is... you know, talked about their struggles. I don't get the sense that Craig Berube, the head coach, is in trouble.
He shouldn't be.
I don't think so.
Yeah. I believe Doug Armstrong gave him like a very solid vote of confidence during a
exactly.
season availability. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think this is a coaching thing. But what I wouldn't be surprised, I feel like when you watch the Blues right now, it seems off. And you're right. You know, like they're not fast. And
that's tough to watch.
It's tough.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is the type of group that needs a shake-up trade, like a wake-up call.
Yeah.
Because, and I'll say this, they know they're not playing well. And, I mean, they're professionals that in that room. You look at a guy like Ryan O'Reilly, he's been through the wars on both sides. He's seen the worst of the NHL, he's seen the best of the NHL. So it's not a matter of these guys just giving up.
Mm-hmm.
But something's off there. To me, I think, you know, and I don't know if Doug Armstrong would do this, but you make a big trade. Maybe it's Braden Schenn, who is a point-per-gamer, and the player who, even though he's a veteran, he's got a lot of skills, especially come playoff time, that I think a lot of teams would like.
Oh, he'd be an incredible deadline ad for him.
Totally.
Yeah.
So, and again, it might not turn around the season, but you get a pretty good package for a player such as Braden Schenn.
You get like a first-round pick for Braden Schenn.
For sure.
Absolutely.
And maybe that just sort of like, it's a tough way to snap a dressing room to attention, but you got to do something because, again, it's not like you're in a position to rebuild. Like, you have a bunch of veterans.
You have zero cap space, too.
Yeah, no cap space. You just signed Jordan Kyrou and Robert Thomas, the long-term deals. I think the fact that they haven't played at the same pace they did last year is obviously a big factor because they were supposed to be the guys to sort of take up the shield this year, whereas, you know, your O'Reillys, your Shens, your Tarasenkos, I mean, at this point in their, you know, career arcs, they should be more your secondary guys, if you think about it. It just hasn't happened. Obviously, goaltending has been an issue, and, you know, we knew going in, Jordan Binnington, he could have been one of two very different things. He could have been lights out, or he could have struggled. We're seeing the struggle right now.
86 save percentage, goals saved above average. We were talking about how Jari and DeSmith are struggling. Mm. There was negative 0.5, negative 0.2. Binnington is negative 4.2.
Yeah. He's down near the bottom. You know, I know Elvis Merzlikens and John Gibson are struggling even more
Elvis
so.
Elvis Merzlikens, in terms of, like, goals saved above expected, or, like, he is the next, I believe he's minus, I believe... The second Gibson's the second last, and he's minus 7.1.
Yeah,
Merzlikens is like minus 9.8.
Yeah, there's a big gulf. Yeah, exactly.
Gulf.
So I mean, for me, it's hard because again, you know, you believe in the coach, you don't have any cap space, you just signed some of your best young players, and it's not working. The only thing I can think of, other than hoping that everybody just pulls out, you know, of this tailspin organically, is make a big trade.
Yeah. The most underrated slow start in the league, most underreported slow start in the league. Ryan O'Reilly, 10 games, 1 goal, 0 assists, minus 12.
Yeah.
Like, Jordan Kyrou is a minus 15. At least he has, you know, he has 3 goals, 4 points in 10 games, and he's also like a 24-year-old. Ryan O'Reilly, he's a pending free agent after this season. That is, and this is not like, he's not banged, like he's averaging 18 and a half minutes a night. That is a disaster.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at, like, for example, what you were expecting the Tarasenko, Schenn, and O'Reilly to become is essentially what, like, Sagan and Ben have become on the Stars.
Yeah.
Which we will get into in a little bit with Jason Robertson. But,
yeah.
like, you know, they, and then they are sort of, like, upheld by the Rube Hintz and Jason Robertson.
Yeah.
And, like, maybe, like, Gurianov and guys like that.
Indeed.
That just hasn't...
Joe Pavelski.
Exactly. But that just... Oh, Joe Pavelski. The guy's, like, a teenager. He's 40 years old.
Exactly.
It just hasn't happened. And when you have a guy like Ryan O'Reilly, who is so important to your team, he takes all the important draws. He's really a penalty killer. He's a guy who's on the power play, too. That's a disastrous start. Nothing offensively, and he's on... He's on for 12 goals against, you know, that's pretty rough. Another team that is struggling, the Ottawa Senators. DJ Smith. So I believe Pierre Dorion had you know, all these teams, they have their state of the union, you know, panic GM media availabilities, right? And Pierre Dorion said, you know, DJ's our coach. It's not even I don't even need to give him a vote of confidence. Right. He doesn't need that. He's right. Our coach. He's our man.
Yeah.
How dare you for even bringing that possibility up?
Yeah.
But 4-7, they have 8 points. This was a team that went out and remade the roster pretty drastically. And yes, losing Josh Norris is a big deal.
Yeah.
But Claude Giroux, Alex DeBrincat, you know, you bring Cam Talbot, who's now coming back from injury. Mm. You re-signed Anton Forsberg last year because he gave you a lot of good stuff, and you're expecting to be better than he was. This is a disaster in Ottawa, too.
You know what? I think disaster's
okay,
a little strong because I do factor in no Cam Talbot for the first month-ish of the season. No Josh Norris, who ostensibly, you know, either your number one center or, you know, your
one. You take a 30-goal score off the team, it's going to have an impact.
Exactly, yeah. Especially down the middle. Again, coming into this season, we looked at Ottawa, Detroit, Buffalo as three teams that wanted to take that next step in the Atlantic Division. All three of them couldn't do it at the same time, unfortunately.
No, you're right. Yeah.
Right? Detroit, off to an amazing start. Buffalo, off to a great start as well.
Buffalo is fun, man.
Buffalo's so fun.
Fun team.
Yeah. So, unfortunately for Ottawa, it feels like they're going to have to wait their turn now. And again, I mean, maybe they turn it around. But right now, it kind of looks like a year where, you know, yeah, it's still early, but maybe they're just kind of playing spoilers. And again, keep just like getting those reps, you know, get Shane Pinto as much ice time as he'll take on, because I mean he's been I would say a silver lining so far. NHL rookie of the month,
6 goals in 11 games.
Yeah, so yeah. You take the positives. And you know, I think they're getting Jacob Bernard Docker with Thomas Chabot.
Yeah,
that's great. Get JBD the reps.
Yeah,
you know, Jake Sanderson, it's his rookie year. Let him go through the fire. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, I know Sens fans were hoping that this would be the year that they would contest for a playoff spot. Maybe they still can. I mean, things can go up and down in this division. But if it's not, at least get everybody on the same page, you know, playing hard at the end of the year, playing spoilers. And then you go into next year with healthy Talbot, healthy Norris, you know, more Jake Sanderson, more Shane Pinto, another year of development for Brady Tkachuk, and then maybe next year is your year. That to me is sort of, you know, I would say the best case scenario is that they go on a big winning streak, mm-hmm. but if you can't have that and it's not going to be your year, at least make it another development year. And, you know, unfortunately, they'll have to be patient, but I don't think DJ Smith can be faulted for anything he's done.
Yeah.
And I like Pierre Dorion just stamping it out. Be like, no, he's my guy.
Yeah.
And DJ Smith has been a great coach for them so far. Mm-hmm. You know, we know he can develop talent. We've seen it at the junior level, and he's been great for them so far. So I think you let DJ Smith continue to do what he's been doing. And, you know, you chalk it up to sometimes it just doesn't happen.
DJ Smith, I think, is being a great coach to develop talent. Mm. This is the year where they were supposed to take a step, and it hasn't really happened. I think that is worth sort of questioning. Yes, we've talked about all the caveats here, but, like, you went out and you got a superstar like Alex DeBrincat.
You went out
and you got Claude Giroux. Drake Batherson, you know, you re-signed. Brady Tkachuk is re-signed forever. Tim Stützle is re-signed forever. And yet, you know, like you're getting good production of Tyler Mott, a guy that you basically signed to you know, a 1 year deal on like the day before training camp. You know, he's got 7 points, 11 games. I think it's fair to question, at least, you know, like maybe not his job security, but fair to question, like, okay, we know that he can develop talent. We know the players like him. We've seen that at every step of his career. He was voted like the most likable sort of like assistant or even just coach like around the league in the player poll. Mm. He was like the only assistant coach to get that sort of that nod. So we know that like he's a player's coach. We know that it works out really well. But this is supposed to be a year where you take a step. This is supposed to be a year where it's not about development. Mm-hmm. It's about improvement.
Yeah.
And that really hasn't happened. So I think it's fair to question that. DeBrincat having 2 goals in 11 games to start off is a bit of a rough go, but I mean they have a really good core in Ottawa there.
Yeah.
The defense, you know, even like Sanderson and Bernard Docker are going to be good defensemen. Mm. They need time to marinate. You have Chabot; he's a very good defenseman there. Goaltending is going to be interesting with Cam Talbot and Anton Forsberg, but you know, you're right. Maybe they need to wait their turn. And Buffalo and Detroit seem to beat them to the punch on that.
Exactly.
So, and then again, it's early.
It is.
11 games in, maybe they go on a crazy streak and we look like absolute fools.
Maybe.
We will.
Hamburger 2.
Absolutely. We shall see. Last one here. Jason Robertson is just an is going absolutely crazy. This guy's a star. He's got 8 goals, 10 assists, 18 points in 12 games. You know, yes, he's not even shooting that crazy, shooting 17.8, which is somewhat on line with where he is and what sort of like big stars go for. Like, just let's just gush about this guy.
Yeah, and the reason that I wanted to talk about Jason Robertson, because he was very good last year as well, is I know some folks out there be like, oh, I can't believe they got him in the second round. But what's so interesting to me about prospects is that, you know, when Jason Robertson was in the OHL, skating held him back.
Yeah.
And it's really tough because, I mean, that is one of those things that you can improve, and he's obviously put in the work to become a better skater. But it's kind of funny because when you're dealing with teenagers, there's so many factors. A lot of it is just actual physical strength. That can be one thing where...
And he's a lanky guy.
Yeah, and scouts will look into that and say, you know, like they were saying with Logan Cooley last year in his draft year, it's like, this kid, he's already a great, great skater, but once he gets more lower body strength, he'll be even faster. With Jason Robertson, I think he was fairly big in junior, but it was like, yeah, the first step's not there, so, you know, it's a sort of a risk-reward scenario, and you hope that a player will get that improvement, but you don't know for sure, and hence him going in the second round. So, I mean, good on Dallas for looking at his body of work and be like, this kid can score, and he knows where to go to score. Mm-hmm. He's got the instincts, he's got the release. So if he can put in the work on the skating, we might have something there. And that's exactly what happened. Does it always work out that way? No, unfortunately, it doesn't. But Jason Robertson did the work. He saw what he needed to do to become a star in the NHL. And now we're seeing the fruits of those labors. I mean, we saw it last year as well. But now we're seeing him lead the Stars. And again, I feel just like lately, when you look at Dallas, their scouting department, the way they develop players, you know, they had, I think, 2 of the 3 CHL players of the year last year, like OHL player of the year, Wyatt Johnston, WHL player of the year, Logan Stankoven, Maverick Bork, I think, was the playoff MVP in the queue. I mean, that's just like wild for one organization, but it speaks to that group and what they're able to see and what they can, you know, they can hone those teenagers into young professionals. And they're reaping the benefits, particularly with Jason Robertson.
One question that's off topic from a Jason Robertson perspective. Do the Stars let Wyatt Johnston go to the World Juniors this year?
It's a good question.
I'm perplexed by it, especially because we're going and covering it.
Right.
I would like to see Wyatt Johnston selfishly. So
yeah. You know what? I think it depends on what kind of role he has once December rolls around. Mm. Where the Stars are. And honestly, it comes down to what's the best for the player. Mm-hmm. And, you know, interestingly enough, at the Summer World Juniors, Logan Stankoven, obviously one of the standouts for Team Canada. So I wrote an article about him for the magazine, and I interviewed Rich Peverly, part of Dallas's development staff. And he was saying, you know, anytime that one of your prospects can win either a Memorial Cup or a Calder Cup, you know, that's great. That's great experience.
Yeah.
So, you know, a World Juniors, if Johnston could win a gold with Canada, that would obviously be great. But as it is now, he's a pretty effective rookie for them.
Yeah.
He definitely earned his spot there. So that might be a conversation they have with him and say, look, you know, you can stay in Dallas because you earned it.
Yeah.
And that would be great. Or do you think, you know, you'd like to go for gold with Canada, take on a leadership role on that team, come back after? There's no wrong answer, and you know, there's upsides and downsides to it. I mean, if he gets hurt at the World Juniors, then you're like,
that's a risk. Yeah.
But you could get great experience at the same time. So I think it depends on what his role is, what kind of ice time he's getting once December rolls around.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's averaging over 14 minutes a night, so it's not
that's
necessarily
solid.
Yeah, it's not a Shane Wright situation where he's like trapped in press box purgatory. They're not even using him, so it's like
they're using him more now.
A little bit more. Not as much as you'd like.
But they're also a wagon right now.
They are. Yeah. It's, look, man, I was saying that the Kraken had a good offseason. So it's going to be interesting. All right, let's go to mailbag. Mm-hmm. I am trying to find it. Find the questions here. Because I believe we tweeted it out yesterday.
Yes.
And I'm just killing time trying to find it.
I know there was two. One was from Matt Boringer. And his question was about Phil Kessel. You got that one?
Yeah. So if Phil Kessel went back in time and convinced his younger self to eat better and work out more, what would his ceiling be? That is, what a disrespectful question.
Just shit.
You keep his name out of your mouth, Matthew Boringer. Phil Kessel is a saint.
He's a saint.
Right?
Yeah.
He's the Iron Man for a reason. He's a 2-time Stanley Cup champion.
Yeah. And you know what? In all seriousness, I would say, I don't think he should change a thing.
No.
If he went back down. Phil Kessel knows his body. He knows, clearly, I mean, the Iron Man, but also he's played at such a high level for so long, and as you said, he's had so much success. He knows what he needs to do to be successful.
Yes.
And that is so integral for a professional athlete. Some guys never figure it out. Phil Kessel figured it out long ago, so for me, I wouldn't change a thing. Clearly, he found a way for him to, and people say, again, we've heard the stories, we've talked about it on the podcast before, where, he'd kind of be hanging around the gym and somebody would challenge him to, do curls or bench press, and he would just knock him out of the park or leg press, whatever happened to
be. And just go back to chilling.
And he'd just go back to chilling. That's somebody that knows exactly what they need to do to be prepared. Some guys need a lot of rest.
Yeah.
Right? And they want to make sure they're prepared for the important moments. The coaches have figured it out that Phil knows what he's doing, so they let him to it. Phil knows what he's doing, and he's had a tremendous career. So I say, no changes. Don't mess with success.
He asked his body what was best for it. His body said Coke on the bench. Bottles of Coke on the bench. Clearly that's worked. So there you go. This is from @open_ice_1. What can we expect to see from Marco Rossi after an okay-ish start with some side noises? Mm-hmm. Numbers are not there yet. He's up and down the lineup. Whether that's unjust or not, blame from the coach in that regard. What can we expect from Marco Rossi?
Yeah, so this is a pretty interesting situation because I think expectations have been pretty high for Marco Rossi because he had such a great junior career with the Ottawa 67s in the OHL, and he was a high pick. As we said before on the podcast, he did lose a lot of development time because of COVID, had a great year in the AHL last year. But you look at the Minnesota Wild, and they're, an okay team right now in the standings. I know, they're not happy with where they are. With Rossi, he's kind of in a bottom six role right now. And, he is the type of player, because he has such a good two-way game, you can put him there. And, he's not getting points. He's got 1 in 10 games. It's not ideal. But unfortunately, if you're Minnesota, you can't really try him out in too many different spots because you got to keep pace in that central division. This is not a team that's rebuilding. This is a team that wants to make some noise this year. You got Kirill Kaprizov right up top doing big things. Matt Boldy has been great for them. He kind of came along before Rossi.
Helped out my fantasy team. Thank you, Matt.
There you go. I think a lot of people, probably a couple of years ago when they were drafted, thought, Rossi would get to the NHL before Boldy. Mm-hmm. The opposite has been true, and obviously a couple of different factors there, as I mentioned. But he's just going to have to struggle through it. And I would say, if the Wild, and I know they do have some injuries right now, but if the Wild look at this scenario and say, we need him getting big minutes, we need him getting his scoring touch back, get his confidence, maybe he goes to Iowa for a couple of weeks in the AHL. I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. Or they let him fight through it in a bottom six role. This is a team that is not deep down the middle, keep in mind.
Yeah. No,
so they do need centers. But you can't just toss him on a scoring line and hope that he figures out the NHL right away.
Yeah.
Coming into the season, I think he played 2 games for Minnesota last year. Everything else was Iowa. Mm-hmm. So he's still learning the game up here. And you're a competitive team, so you don't have the luxury of letting him make a lot of mistakes right now. So they got to be careful with him, but at least they have options.
And he lost a year of his development.
That's so big.
That is at that age.
Yeah.
He was, what, 18, 19 when that happened?
Yeah.
That's huge. That could be devastating to someone.
Certainly.
He's technically a year behind everyone that of his peers.
And that's how you should look at it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you should look at him as, instead of, you know, instead of this guy who's coming in who's had all these years of marinating, he is, like, dock him back a year in the draft.
Totally.
And adjust your expectations, you know, accordingly.
Certainly.
All right. Rapid fire. Now, I have a couple here. Just
right.
Only a couple. It's going to be a short rapid fire. We'll
okay.
Put them happening rapid fire. But
good.
I thought, let's go. Let's do some obscure hockey trivia for you.
Let's try.
You've been in hockey forever.
Yes.
You know it. So let's do it. My first one is Olli Jokinen was traded to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yes.
In the 2014-2015 season.
Mm.
How many games did he play for the Maple Leafs?
Ooh. Okay. So, I mean, I certainly remember being in the dressing room with Olli Jokinen, but it was a long time. I'm completely guessing here. I'm going to say 33 games.
He played six.
Was it six?
He got traded to the Leafs.
Yeah.
I believe in a Cody Franzen trade.
Sure.
And then he, he was a salary inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
He played six games with the Leafs. He had one assist.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got traded to the Blues to finish out the rest of his career. And that was the last we saw him in the NHL.
Gotcha.
Interesting. Another one. This one is very interesting. I actually saw this one on TikTok the other day. It reminded me of it. So I thought
mm-hmm.
I'd bring it to you. Who is the only player in NHL history to score a goal in a game he never played in?
Score a goal in a game he never played in? That's fascinating. I have no idea.
So that player is Nathan Horton. And what happened here is the Blue Jackets, he was on the Blue Jackets at the time. The
uh-huh.
Blue Jackets and the Stars played each other in 2014.
Uh-huh.
That happened to be the game that, and they played through the first period, and Nathan Horton opened the scoring. That happened to be the game that Rich Peverly unfortunately had a heart attack, essentially,
right.
On the ice. The game was called, you know, whatever, but what they did is they essentially postponed that game
and they played a full game, but
they kept the score.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, Nathan Horton was then placed on LTIR and he would never play again, but he was still credited with a goal in that game. So now he is the only player in NHL history to score a goal in a game he never played in.
Well done.
Very, very interesting. And I will go, when, another one is, at what year did the NHL start enforcing offside?
Wow. Enforcing offside. So, I'm going to say, like, again, I'm just totally guessing. I'm going to say, like, 1934.
You're actually close, 1930.
Wow,
yeah,
there you go.
You know what? I was actually expecting it to be a bit farther down from that. Like, a bit farther on. Because, I mean, keep in mind, we had a two-line pass rule for a while. You know?
Yeah.
There was a forward pass rule for a little
while. Well, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go too far back because you can't go offside if you can't pass forward. So it had to be pretty far back because if you're only passing behind you, then offside would be nearly impossible.
So, and my last question here. It's good. You got very close there. You know, that was, by Price is Right rules, you would have lost because you went over.
Right.
But, you know,
yeah.
Then again, I am not Bob Barker, so I'll let you slide.
There you go.
My last one is, so we've seen in the World Series,
uh-huh.
a lot, and in the playoffs in general, a lot of rainouts,
mm.
a lot of, and you would think with hockey, that would not be the case, we're
mm-hmm.
indoors. What is the only, what game, there's only been one instance in NHL history was a rain, did rain cancel a game?
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, there's the famous fog game
yeah.
between the Flyers and Sabres. And I know there's a power outage during another Stanley Cup final.
Mm-hmm.
I think Edmonton was involved there.
The game was called due to rain.
Yeah. It must have been I'm going to say it was an outdoor game. Like maybe a Stadium Series game?
No, it was indoor.
An indoor game. Oh,
yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I don't know.
It was in 1995, the Detroit Red Wings and San Jose Sharks met each other in San Jose, and it was such torrential rain that it began to flood the Sharks' home arena.
Wow.
And they had to cancel the game.
Interesting.
So, you know what? You,
I showed up.
You showed up.
That's
you
all
did,
I can
you,
say.
You did it. And,
yeah.
And you know what? Next time, I will do one of those games that you did with me. That was a lot of fun, so we'll
there
do that. That brings us to the end of the show. I think another great episode.
Dude.
Loved it so much. Obviously, check out thehockeynews.com for all your lovely hockey content from Ryan and I and all our lovely writers. And check out next week when we do this all over again.